Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, June 7, 2024. Lawmakers grill South Sudan's minister to account for $10 million US dollars earmarked for implementing the 2018 peace agreement.
What we have established from our interaction is that the fund was indeed transferred to the Minister of Cabinet Affairs, and they have been paying some of these institutions, though the amount is still yet to be clarified by the Minister of Finance.
And 10 million people are displaced by the ongoing conflict in Sudan.
Today, I'm not just a representative of a UN agency. I'm a voice for millions of Sudanese whose lives have been forever altered by the ongoing crisis. Families have been torn apart, communities devastated.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese lawmakers questioned the Minister of Cabinet Affairs Thursday to explain how $10 million US dollars earmarked for implementing the 2018 peace agreement were spent. For VOA News, Dennis Longonyi reports from Juba.
South Sudan's Minister for Cabinet Affairs, Martin Elia Lomoro, faced questions in the Transitional National Legislative Assembly about how $10 million US dollars meant to fund efforts to implement the 2018 peace agreement was spent. Lomoro says part of the money went to two classified projects authorized by President Salva Kiir.
His Excellency the President assigned the senior special presidential envoy for special programs to work with me to see how payments could be made. And considering the financial challenges, the amounts required by some of the peace institutions was downgraded.
Members of the assembly say the money was to have gone to the Judicial Reform Committee, National Constitution Review Commission, and Human Rights Council. However, those bodies did not receive the funds. Oye Nathaniel Perino, the deputy speaker of the assembly, says records indicate the funds were sent to accounts of the Minister of Cabinet Affairs.
We could not agree as Parliament on the purposes of the fund, which we thought was as per the attachment, which was accompanying the letter of request to the Minister of Finance and Planning. The attachment had sets of activities which later developed into additional extra activities being introduced after the funds was actually transferred.
Lomoro says his office was ordered to channel the $10 million to two institutions tasked with preparation for the elections in December.
What needs to be made very clear to these institutions that they will be paid what has been reduced as the first payment. The second payment will now be submitted again to the Minister of Finance, and those who deserve whatever is given to them, they will get it. Again, we were directed to give priority to the National Election Commission and to the Political Party Council.
Oyet says lawmakers will continue to investigate institutions concerning the funds.
What we have established from our interaction is that the fund was indeed transferred to the Minister of Cabinet Affairs, and they have been paying some of these institutions, though the amount is still yet to be clarified by the Minister of Finance and also the Governor of the Bank of South Sudan.
Chan Kwos Bichok Reth, chairperson of the Financial Committee in the Legislative Assembly, says Parliament needs to be aware of how the money was spent.
By law, if you come to public financial management and accountability, it doesn't work that way, because anything that was not allocated in any amount that is released, people should focus on exact allocation that was done initially.
Peter Malir, chairperson of South Sudan Youth Organizations Coalition, says accountability and transparency could reduce corruption in South Sudan.
The action of Parliament today really portrays the legal mandate as an oversight to check and balance, and also being able to confirm the social contract that people of South Sudan have given to them. And now that issues of governance and accountability are emerging clear.
Some lawmakers say the minister of Cabinet Affairs, Finance, Justice, and the Governor of the Bank of South Sudan should account for the $10 million. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logoni reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we move to Khartoum, where the International Organization for Immigration warns the number of internally displaced people in Sudan will soon top 10 million as conflict and acute hunger spread throughout the country. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Mohamed Rafat is chief of mission for the International Organization for Migration, or IOM, in Sudan. He calls the crisis unfolding a catastrophic human tragedy. He tells journalists in Geneva that he is speaking from Port Sudan with a heavy heart and a profound sense of urgency.
Today, I'm not just a representative of a UN agency. I'm a voice for millions of Sudanese whose lives have been forever altered by the ongoing crisis. Families have been torn apart, communities devastated, and their future put on hold. The human toll of this crisis is huge.
Rafat says more than half of the 9.9 million internally displaced are women, and over a quarter are children. In addition, more than 2 million people have fled as refugees into neighboring countries, mainly to Chad, South Sudan, and Egypt. He says displacement was largely concentrated within Darfur and Kordofan states before the rival generals of the Sudanese armed forces and paramilitary rapid support forces went to war in mid-April 2023. Since then, he says, displacement has spread across all 18 states, with the majority, 36%, from the capital, Khartoum. He says 70% of people uprooted from their homes are trying to survive in areas at risk of famine. He says most of these areas are in the Darfur region, where they are almost completely cut off from humanitarian aid.
The humanitarian situation has entered a new, alarming chapter with the outbreak of fights in Al-Fashir, the capital of North Darfur, putting over 800,000 civilians at risk. Movement restrictions are shocking the lifeline of those in the state, with crucial roads out of Al-Fashir blocked and preventing civilians from reaching safer areas, limiting the amount of food and humanitarian aid coming into the city.
Rafat says the prices of food, water, and fuel are skyrocketing, making these essential goods unaffordable. He says aid agencies are struggling to keep pace with the growing needs at a time when international funding is seriously lacking. He notes IOM's $312.5 million appeal to provide aid for 1.7 million people this year is only 19% funded. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still on Sudan, pro-democracy activists reported Friday about 40 people were killed in violent artillery fire carried out the previous day. Paramilitary rapid support forces on Omdurman, Khartoum's twin city. The Karari Resistance Committee, one of the hundreds of grassroots pro-democracy groups that coordinate aid across Sudan, said RSF was behind Thursday's deadly attack on Omdurman. According to the French news agency AFP, the committee says so far that the toll is estimated at 40 civilians and there are more than 50 injured, some very serious. The shelling comes a day after RSF was accused of killing more than 104 people, including 35 children, Wednesday in an attack on the village of Wad Al Nura in Al Jazeera State, south of Khartoum. One in 10 people around the world fall ill each year from contaminated food. The World Health Organization says over 200 diseases are caused by eating contaminated food, with 40% of the foodborne disease affecting children under the age of 5. Moreno Giambo reports on World Food Safety Day.
World Food Safety Day is celebrated every year on June 7th to raise awareness and educate people about bad and contaminated food. According to the World Health Organization, food safety is a global concern as unsafe food can lead to foodborne diseases with severe health consequences. Maria Neira is the Director of Public Health, Environment and Social Determinants of Health Department at the World Health Organization. She says everyone has a role to play to ensure the food is safe to eat.
Food safety has a direct impact on our health. Over 200 diseases are caused by eating contaminated food. Some are mild, but others can be deadly. We tend to think about food safety only when we get sick, and we should think more often because foodborne diseases are entirely preventable.
The WHO report indicates that in Africa, foodborne diseases are responsible for 137,000 deaths and 91 million acute illnesses each year. Many countries across the world are struggling with the burden of foodborne diseases. The incidents have often been underestimated due to underreporting and difficulty in establishing relationship between food contamination and illness or death.
Food safety standards protect everyone's lives. They are key to ensuring safety and quality. And that's why WHO, together with FAO, leads global experts groups and provides scientific advice to develop international food safety standards to protect consumers' health.
This year's theme is Food Safety, Prepare for the Unexpected, highlighting the need to be prepared for food safety incidents. Nera says efforts are needed to prevent, detect, and manage foodborne risks.
Safe food allows the uptake of nutrients and promotes human development. Nobody should die from eating food. These are preventable deaths.
The WHO says foodborne diseases are infectious and toxic. They are caused by bacteria, viruses, parasites, or chemical substances entering the body through contaminated food. Chemical contamination can lead to acute poisoning or long-term diseases such as cancer, with many foodborne diseases leading to long-lasting disability and death. Xu Dongyu is the Director General of the Food and Agriculture Organization.
To stay healthy and productive, every person needed their food to be safe. And food safety is the responsibility of everyone along the entire value chain from the producer to the consumer. Over the past few years, we have been faced with unexpected and multiple threats which have affected food availability, food accessibility, and food affordability.
The World Health Organization says food safety campaigns are receiving minimal political attention, especially in developing countries. More than 600 million people fall ill and 420,000 die every year after eating contaminated food. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, we look at issues in the upcoming elections in America. That story is coming up right after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Former U.S. President Donald Trump faces the prospect of prison time after a New York jury convicted him of falsifying business records in a hush money trial. The legal process casts uncertainty on his campaign and future election chances. Tina Trin reports from New York.
Donald Trump was found guilty of falsifying business records as part of a conspiracy to suppress damaging information ahead of his 2016 election. Convicted during this presidential campaign, the ruling raises questions as to how Trump will continue that campaign if he's sent to prison. Former federal prosecutor Stephen Cohen does not expect Trump will be incarcerated soon.
There will be intense post-trial motions, and then there will be an appeal. And that appeal will take months, if not more than a year. So I think much of this will feed the political drama more than it will feed the story, at least initially, of Donald Trump's fate as a consequence of this conviction.
Trump's sentencing is set for July 11th. Legal experts say the length of any prison term would likely be far less than the charge's 20-year maximum. Joseph Tully is a criminal defense attorney.
Given his age, given his lack of criminal history, and given that the result here it really speaks for itself that he's actually not looking at a lot of punishment, very significant punishment.
Others point to the prison time already served by Trump's former personal attorney, Michael Cohen, as precedent for Trump's sentencing. Defense attorney Abby Smith teaches at Georgetown Law School.
It's very rare for an underling in a conspiracy to get jail time and the kingpin not. Donald Trump was at the top of this criminal conspiracy, and Michael Cohen did some serious jail time. He spent months. So there is some precedent for a judge sentencing Mr. Trump to jail.
Alternatives to prison include probation, house arrest, and fines. But it's most likely that any sentence won't be carried out until after the appeals process, which is liable to go past Election Day in November. Whatever sentence materializes next month, it'll inform sentencing for the three criminal cases that are still pending against Trump. Preet Bharara is a former U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York.
The fact of this conviction here, if it's still on the books, would result in a potential higher prison sentence in those future cases. So it does have a consequence because he will now, unlike a week ago, have a criminal record, and criminal records are taken into account in meeting out punishment.
Of the other federal and state charges Trump is facing, the Florida trial for those involving mishandling of classified documents is further delayed. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
From politics, we now go to health issues. Zimbabwe is facing long hours of power cuts because of its depleted infrastructure and the impact of recurring droughts on hydropower. To help, the United Nations Development Program is installing solar panels on government-owned health facilities. For VOA News, Columbus Mavunga reports from Bulawayo.
Health centers in 15 countries have installed solar power through the United Nations Development Program's Solar for Health project. That includes more than 1,000 health centers in Zimbabwe, the largest program in the world, says UNDP resident representative in Zimbabwe, Aloya Dele Odusola.
If you put all the renewable energy capacity that we have generated in the country, is 13.03 megawatts, which account for 35% of all independent power production, the one that is not done by government. It's huge as an individual entity.
Zimbabwe has for years been facing energy shortages. Long hours of power cuts affect even hospitals. Dr. Nasisi Janga is the chief medical officer at Impilo Central Hospital, one of the health institutions which have benefited from the Solar for Health project.
It would mean all the news that used to make the headlines in the newspapers that Impilo has no electricity for 2 days, 3 days. That should be a thing of the past. It's a real game changer.
Tandazani Chingila is happy his father's prostate cancer operation went through at Impilo Central Hospital without a power shortage. He says they've saved a lot of lives who come here to the hospital. Now there is solar. It means Impilo Hospital is now off-grid, which means Impilo Hospital is now independent because of the solar, which is marvelous to us. Authorities hope the switch to solar energy is seamless at all health facilities in Zimbabwe installed with solar power and excess is released to the national grid. Columbus Mavungam, VOA News, Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
From Southern Africa, we move to North Africa, close to the Mediterranean Sea, where an Egyptian appeal court upheld a one-year sentence for opposition politician Ahmed al-Tantawi, who was then arrested inside the courthouse. Tantawi, who had hoped to run against President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi in elections last year, was found guilty of election campaign irregularities in February. The former lawmaker was also barred from running in parliamentary elections for 5 years. Mohamed Anwar al-Sadat, president of the opposition party, Reform and Development, and a colleague of Tantawi discussed the sentence with VOA's senior analyst Muhammad Al-Ashanawi.
This was expected. Ahmed Tantawi, who is a close friend, he was taking a bit tough position when he was in the parliament, and we were together at that time. So he was really representing those who speak the truth as an independent parliamentarian. So it was very obvious that the regime was not happy with his performance or attitude. So when he announced that he is going to run for the last presidential election, and there has been a lot who have been surrounding him from the new generations, whom they see him as a hope for a better future, that was somehow representing, I wouldn't say a real threat to the regime or to Sisi, but they were trying to avoid having a kind of confrontation with those youngsters in the streets if he succeeded in being a candidate. So they make his life difficult when he was trying to get this authorizations from his supporters according to the procedure of the election commissions. But Tantawi definitely is patriot, sincere, and he does not deserve this sentence he got.
Tantawi had accused the authorities of hampering his effort to collect the endorsements required to run the presidential election under various pretexts, including computer malfunctions. And Tantawi instead asked his supporters to fill out unofficial popular endorsement forms, a tactic the authorities labeled as a fraud. Why did your party ask President Sisi to pardon Tantawi?
As a colleague, Tantawi deserved this kind of pardon, which we have been asking the president for, because we know that even if he will make another appeal or if he go to the cassation court, it will take time. So to avoid this, the only way is that the president will have to show some tolerance, especially that he is calling for what they say, the national dialogue, opening up, giving chances for the opposition with more civic and political space. So I believe they should really consider giving him the pardon and giving him the chance that he can run for the coming parliamentary elections in a year and a half time. Because in the sentence, it was also indicated that he should not be allowed to practice his political rights for 5 years, which is not fair. So I hope by collecting signatures from different politicians, intellectuals, and presented to President Sisi that he can reconsider the sentence and give him this pardon.
That's Muhammad Anwar al-Sadat, president of the opposition party Reform and Development. He was speaking to VOA's senior analyst Muhammad al-Ashanawi. It's time for us to hear what you think about this show, how we are doing it, and what we should change. We will start with a recorded voice message from a listener.
I'm Peter Gochanyang Majongdul in Jonglei State, town of Bor. I appeal to other states to learn from the Eastern Equatorial states by arresting all the gangsters to make sure that all the towns are peaceful from this armed robbery from young gangsters.
And a listener who did not disclose his or her name writes, the Malakal incident, which left several innocent civilians dead, is very unfortunate. The administration after independence is worse than rebellion time of SPLM in the bush. The communal clashes is very frequent in the country after independence. My condolences to the families who lost their loved ones. Mal Adao Mal in Washington, Seattle writes, hello, John and Nabil. South Sudan Parliament is a true definition of a rubber stamp institution. I pity the MP who said the parliament in Juba is doing great. This institution is not even 1% of serious parliament in any nation. It can only do good when it's something beneficial to them. James Roy Majok from Unity State, Bantu Town writes, hi, South Sudan in Focus program. Our government should prioritize food security through agriculture across the country. Depending on humanitarian assistance will create more starvation in South Sudan for some years to come. Another listener who calls himself Balash Joram Sarkondo in Yambio, Western Equatorial State, writes, "Good evening, John Tanza and your producer. Sincerely, majority of children who are the youth and the future of South Sudan disobey their families and are participating in gambling, smoking, loitering, and other criminal activities. I encourage the youth to focus on positive direction for their future and to avoid being politically motivated." I call Nicholas Madut from Gogoriel East County of Warab State writes, "Hello, South Sudan in Focus. Hello, John Tanza and Bill with all your team. I really appreciate your tireless effort towards the progress of South Sudan in terms of media. I kindly request your office to have a well-trained professional journalist in Warab State as your reporter. May God bless South Sudan and South Sudan in Focus." Ton Mamor Makwet from Juba writes, "Dear John Tanza, I am in Juba. I wish the leadership of the economic cluster in the government of South Sudan comes forward and address the citizens on their take in the current economic heat and advice on how people will survive without salaries for more than half of the year. Views expressed in this segment does not represent the views of the management of Voice of America or this program. That's all we prepared for you for this Friday, June 7th, 2024. We now leave you with the song Africa Moto by Mose Singo. Listening to Mose Singo and the song Africa Moto. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Jogio, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Si petite il m'a bercé, il consolait moi tendrement.
Oh yeah, Africa, ça t'a donné.